This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me as we visit with blues singer April Sexy Red Jackson and Maxine Crump, CEO of Dialogue on Race, Louisiana.
April Sexy Red Jackson.
Ah, I love it. So, April, here we are in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Yes.
And you grew up here?
Yes, born and raised since 1970. Ooh. Telling my age there.
Yeah. Tell us about juke joints.
Sure, sure. Well, my experience with juke joints goes a little far back, but not so far back as some of, you know, the folks that were here at the Blues Lagniappe. Given the fact of coming out sometime in the late 80s and 90s is when I had the opportunity to understand what a juke joint is. And to walk in a facility or a place that's raggedy, the lights, mostly Christmas lights, usually they're either white or red, hanging all types of ways, stuff all over the place. It looks like it hadn't had a good dusting in years. That's a juke joint to me. People laughing and talking, and as soon as you open the door, everybody turns around, hey! And then you say, hey? You know? That's a juke joint. A lot of blues, mostly blues.
And most of the juke joints are rural. They're
in the they're way in the country. Yeah. They're off the dirt roads. They're off way off roads, especially Teddy's Juke Joint. You go out there in Zachary at night and you can't see anything, but he has this little tiny light that's flashing. But the juke joint is all the way off the road, way in the back. So, you know, those are the juke joints that I'm accustomed to, where they're off the rural road, they're not in the inner city, which gives you that good feel of that country down-home connection in a juke joint. Mm-hmm.
One of the interesting things, we were talking earlier, and I told you about my history, and I connected juke joint with its history of the jukebox.
Yes.
But then you were telling us about its West African roots of the name juke. Tell us about that.
Sure, sure. Well, with juke, the African dancers in Africa, the motions and the dances that they did to original music with hands and feet, they made juke motions. And from that, it came down to the type of music where so many people carried that music on, a juke joint and the juke music made you juke. Okay? And a lot of people don't even realize that. I'm surprised that didn't come out tonight. But in actuality, the juke from the joint, you're juking your joints to dance to the music. Juke joint.
Interesting. Wow.
Yeah. And then you said something earlier about juke boxes.
Yes.
So you had the older musicians who did the blues in the juke joints. Then as time progressed, and now you got these digital boxes now, but as time progressed and these musicians have became older, they don't come in the juke joints anymore to play and to sing. So what's left? The juke box. And in that box, especially the older ones, you can hit the Bobby Blue Bland. You can hit the Buddy Guy, B.B. King, and Muddy Waters, and all those older cats. Look, Howlin' Wolf. I went somewhere, I was like, they got Howlin' Wolf in the jukebox? Oh, my God. So these guys are long gone. Some are deceased. But when they brought in the jukebox way back, it had all those songs in it because those guys were gone. They were gone. They're not coming into juke joints anymore. Juke box.
I love it. Mm-hmm. I love it. Mm-hmm. But today, there still are juke joints,
yes,
and there still are local performers, right, that do live music.
Yes, there is. There's a lot of blues musicians who travel abroad, which that's one of my biggest focuses, because after traveling with a production company where I opened up on a lot of venues, I was so much of doing that instead of honing into my soul, Southern soul, the blues. So now I'm like, you know, I need to start stepping into some of these older juke joints, because I've been in some, but oh my God, they're all over the world. Yeah. And the good part about it is that those that love blues, love the juke joint setting, they're going to continue to go. Even though times have changed, people still like to walk into a down-home juke joint. The fried chicken and that fish grease, you know. And then you walk out and you're still smelling like fried fish and chicken. You don't know if you need to nibble on yourself or what.
Talk to us a moment about swamp blues and the roots there.
I've touched swamp blues just a little bit. I can't really tell you any big, big names, but
more of the style.
The style,
and the,
yeah.
What makes swamp blues swamp blues?
Swamp. Yeah. Well, natural. Of course, they'll say, some of the older historians, you had to be born in the swamp, yeah, to sing some swamp music, yeah. You know, and it's like, yeah, right. But, you know, I kind of feel like even people that were, you know, like the Atchafalaya Basin, where you got a lot of Creole speaking folk that would come out and, oh, shit, oh, we're going to fish for, you know, and it's a beat, but it's blues. But it come from the swamp. And then they have that Cajun Creole sound going on. So even though you have blues, you got Creole swamp. And those that have that dialect of that Cajun Creole sound, that's how I look at swamp.
Because, and how about in harmonica? Would that be
real strong? Oh, yeah.
Harmonica
is in there, too. Harmonicas are in there as well. Harmonicas, the little caraches, and, you know, all that good stuff. So,
and winding back in time, have people tried to study that pathway of how the West African song and whatnot came to the plantations and continued into the blues tradition?
Yes, definitely. There are a lot of musicians that have started reaching back, okay, and sampling and taking some of that music from Africa to, you know, compile into, I've heard rap songs, I've heard Southern soul songs, I've heard pop songs, and I've even heard rock songs, okay, where they brought that African feel into the song, okay.
And part of it is beat and rhythm.
Beat and rhythm, right, and then juke, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. And so you're close to your heart is singing.
Yes.
Since you were a tiny little girl. Tell us about that.
Yes, well, as far as I know, back and even, you know, with my mom telling me, you know, where and how I started, you know, thanks to her, she's the person that, you know, introduced me to blues.
Right.
Because of all the music she had. And it was a lot of blues.
So did it get you? Did it resonate?
Yeah, because, you know, natural course, there was always the card parties. They always had domino parties. They always had a little Miller Pony. I remember that because I used to always get them and drink whatever the little corner was. And then they'd have to pick me up and go put me in the bed. Mama, let me get that little corner, you know, because it's all adults, you know. And back then, you know, kids don't sit around adults, you know. So, but even in that setting, you know, with the bead cover for the door, and I'm remembering all the stuff. She played a lot of blues and the feeling and the movement.
Do you remember any specific performers that resonated with you as a little girl?
When I first connected Aretha Franklin, and then I actually stumbled across hearing Eartha Kitt.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
She's timeless.
So when I stumbled across hearing Eartha Kitt, then I was like, wow. And she was powerful, a little small something, but her voice was like, Yeah, so definitely a lot of heavy hitters, a lot of strong singers that I've heard. Bessie Smith.
Well, yes. That's a timeless classic.
Yes, yes. So,
have you been to Chattanooga?
Not yet.
There's a museum there where they have a lot of her stuff. Yeah.
Okay, good. Good, I'll make sure to stop in.
Yeah. Okay, so you started singing in a church choir, right, as a young girl?
Yes, as a young child.
That's what cultivated your singing career?
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. I sung in the junior choir, the young adult choir, the gospel choir, the senior choir. So I touched base with all of them. And basically, all the songs were pretty much gospel, rhythm, gospel. So that's the foundation.
But you've gone on and you have become a recording artist.
Yes, I have.
And
yes,
you
have
a new album coming out shortly.
Yes, yes, yes. It's called Versatile. And the reason why I named it that is because there's so many facets of what I've been singing that it's time for me to show the world I could sing the blues. I could sing the Southern Soul. I could sing the R&B. I could sing the... And you know what? Since you said it, I think I'm going to do a little swamp.
Yeah.
How's that? Some I think that, blue.
I love it.
Ah.
Yeah. You have to keep me posted.
I will.
Yeah.
Definitely. Definitely.
Can I ask you a huge favor?
Sure.
Would you sing a little bit for me?
Sure.
Oh,
let's
I'd be so honored.
Let's see what I can sing for you. I will take you away with me as far as I can. To the moon and the stars. There we will love with our hands in each other's hands as we look across the ocean. Love will keep us together all the days of our lives.
Wow. April.
Are you okay?
Yeah. A little melted. Thank you so much.
You are so welcome. You're so welcome. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Oh, my pleasure.
I greatly appreciate it.
My pleasure and honor. And to learn more about you?
Yes. You can actually find me on Facebook as April N. Jackson. Let's see, Instagram, Red Review Entertainment, because I'm actually CEO of my own entertainment company. And you can actually find me on Google. Just type April Sexy Red. That's all you have to do.
I love it. April Sexy Red, I'm Tom Wilmer. It's been a pleasure to visit with you.
Thank you so much.
God bless.
God bless you too.
All right. I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. We'll see you down here.
I am Maxine Crump.
All right, Maxine, here we are in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. You were born and raised here?
Yes, I was born in Louisiana. I was born on the bayou in Maringouin, Louisiana, which is 25 miles west of Baton Rouge.
And as I recall, was your parents, they owned a juke joint?
My father owned a blues club. The difference in a blues club and a juke joint is a juke joint is a place that was maybe somebody's home or something else that they turn into a club.
Got it.
My dad built his as a club.
So a real club.
It was a real club, but, you know, it was definitely a blues club.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, that being said, I keep hearing about swamp blues.
Yes.
Tell us about, what is that? How does that differentiate?
Well, that differentiates because blues is a music that started in the Deep South, but in the Deep South, people didn't travel, like, they didn't have interstate and everyone went everywhere. So each area had its own sound. And so those who are really familiar with blues in the Baton Rouge blues area, you can kind of tell the musicians here have just a little bit of style in their music. So a lot of it is jumping blues, and then you got the long wailing blues. And that's the sound of swamp blues. But just me telling you that it's really hard to hear. You almost have to really be a practiced listener to know, oh yeah, that's swamp blues.
So it's nuances.
Yes, it is.
Interesting. Well, tell us a little bit more about juke joints and the history of juke joints.
Well, the history of juke joints came about because, I mean, here there has been Reconstruction that has ended. So those who had been released from slavery after Reconstruction ended, and then the Jim Crow laws came in that restricted the movement and the access that those who were former slaves and descendants of slaves were restricted as to where they could move. And their lives were very hard because they did not have access to institutions to move around America like they wanted to. So in trying to express the hard times, it wasn't always safe to talk. So the song seemed to be a good way to talk in code. And so you hear, when you hear other people listen to the blues, you will sometimes hear them say, "Sing the blues," which is saying, "Yes, you're right. I know what you're talking about." So in code, this music was music that expressed the pain and the frustration, and it was also music that relieved the pain and the frustration.
So cathartic.
Yeah, and like you might see some of them just playing acoustic guitar or just blowing harmonica outside, and it's almost like they're just singing to the heavens, like, you know, what am I doing here? I need y'all to know what I'm going through. And so even though the blues is about hard times, it makes them feel good. So it makes everybody feel good. It's a way to deal with the hard times and a way to express and protest.
And how about the instruments? Are there some specific instruments that are...
They play whatever. You know, they would play washtubs. They would play harmonica, which cost about $1 in the height of the blues. And it was a mouth organ. And it could make sounds that you just didn't think could come out of that instrument. And the guitar, the acoustic guitar, until someone finally electrified it and started recording it. But it was the instruments, all of it just came about as... Work with what you got.
Necessity, yeah.
Yes.
Talk to us a little bit about you. So you went to university here?
Yes, LSU.
And what was your major?
I majored in office administration because I went to college just to go to college,
right,
to get an education, because that was in the 60s. That was when the LSU had first been forced to desegregate through a local lawsuit.
That being said, somebody told me that you were a real pioneer.
Yeah,
at that
it turns
time.
Out.
Little did you know.
Yeah.
You were the first black female in the student
in
housing.
Women's housing, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then it gets better. In your on-air presence as a presenter, you were a trailblazer there, too.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, when I was working in radio, and as they told you, I was the first woman DJ in Baton Rouge and then the first black woman DJ at a station that was predominantly white. And from there, Channel 9 wanted to hire an African-American reporter, but they wanted one with experience. And the only experience I had was radio. So I learned on the job.
Are you still doing any
media
journalism?
No, I'm not doing media right now. I have a prospect of someone call me recently to talk to me, so I may be back in television. Not news, though.
Yeah. What I see is you doing some awesome documentaries.
Oh, that's a possibility.
That's a great one.
Yeah.
Tell us about your family and your mom and dad. What did they do?
My parents were both born on the bayou and lived on a bayou from birth to death. They were both Catholic. In the South, Catholics marry Catholics as much as possible. And my dad, as you know, we're descendants of enslaved people that were sold to Louisiana by the Jesuits from Georgetown. So that's how that side got here. My mother's side of the family, her father's father was white, and my mother was mostly white. His mother was mostly white. And then my grandmother, the same thing. And so they were heritage from, my grandfather's heritage was from the plantation, Nottoway. And I don't know on my grandmother's side quite his connection, but I know it was still in Iberville Parish.
So it's interesting in that here we are in Baton Rouge, modern city, and yet it has this historic tentacles that go way back.
You say that well, because that's just now starting to come up for more of a celebration. Like when we started the Blues Foundation in 2000, I think, it was because we saw that blues was not having enough attention here, and we wanted to preserve and promote and expand it because it has its roots here. Not necessarily directly in Baton Rouge, but from the surrounding areas, those bayou areas that are around Baton Rouge, the River City, And so along the river were where these plantations were, and this is where the people who had been from these plantations lived in these stressed areas, and so that's where the blues was evolved. Baton Rouge gave it a home because they had more money to spend to have the musicians play here. So a lot of the music came here, and then it was easy for those who had a bent toward blues, for the young people to start playing the blues as well. But blues was driven out of the United States. That's something people don't...
Oh, yeah.
That is so shocking to people to hear.
Fascinating story.
Yeah.
Tell us about how it was like the Merchant Mariners. Somebody was saying that these guys from England and whatnot would come in on ships and buy the records and bring them back to England and whatnot. And
yes.
And it became
right.
real popular there.
That's right. You know, it was driven out because of the powers that be said it was unsophisticated music and not fit for young people to hear.
Really? So it was an intentional...
Oh, definitely intentional. Wow. No, it was not. It didn't leave. It,
right.
it was driven out.
In what so period blues, of time was this?
This was before the 60s. This was in the height of blues era. In the 50s when it was starting to move across the country to Chicago, to Memphis, and places like that.
It was literally suppressed here.
It was driven out of the United States. It wasn't so much suppressed in the South, but as the South wanted to do business with those areas that didn't want blues, then it got quieted here,
right,
too.
Right, right. Interesting.
Yes. Economic reasons.
Mm-hmm. So, that's really fascinating.
Yeah.
But then it kind of was a boomerang effect.
Yes. When it went, the young people in England, in particular, who started recording it, like the Rolling Stones and the Beatles and Eric Clapton and people like that, their music became so popular, ended up getting tours here, and people say, well, where did you get this music from? And they said, from American bluesmen. And they said, we thought they were dead. People would say, we thought they were dead. So then when they started hearing this music, then they went to find them and bring them out again. And so many of them had resurgent careers like B.B. King and Muddy Waters and people like that.
That's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I feel like I got to let you go. It's getting late.
Yeah, I think this is the last song.
Yep. Thank you so much for sharing.
My pleasure. I'm Maxine Crump, and right now I'm CEO of Dialogue on Race Louisiana.
People can learn more about what you're
Absolutely.
Doing there. That's
yeah.
awesome.
And we're available to anyone, anywhere in the country.
All right. Thanks so much.
All right. You're welcome.
I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. We'll see you down here. I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. We'll see you here.
Sometimes it's hard to stay cool. Sometimes it's hard to stay cool.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
Associate producers include Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Molly Blaisdell, San Francisco, and Katya Singel, San Luis Obispo, California.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative.
Hawaiian Legacy Hardwoods and Four Seasons Resort invite you to sponsor a legacy tree and contribute to the biodiversity of Hawaii. Legacy trees can honor an individual, commemorate an event, or memorialize a loved one. Every tree dedication is a living legacy and a gift which grows grander year after year. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now.
The Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative was recently awarded the prestigious Phoenix Award by the Society of American Travel Writers. HLRI was one of four recipients of the prestigious award that recognizes international organizations actively involved in conservation, preservation, beautification, and anti-pollution campaigns that further the growth and appeal of travel destinations.
It's after midnight here in London. People are dancing on the rooftops and fireworks are exploding in all directions.
This is the happiest day of my
life. 75 years ago, World War II ended. It was the deadliest military conflict in history, resulting in 85 million casualties. We mark the anniversary of the end of that war by celebrating the heroism of our greatest generation, those who served and those who supported their efforts at home. On September 2nd, we will commemorate the signing of the Articles of Surrender aboard the battleship Missouri Memorial at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, a celebration of the peace that followed. Salute their service, honor their hope. Join us virtually for the events on September 2nd, 2020. For further information, go to 75thww2commemoration.org.
This, ladies and gentlemen, is the end of the Second World War.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided in part by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. People often associate the Society of St. Vincent de Paul with thrift stores. Donations like clothing, your gently used couch, or still serviceable washing machine generate funds to assist the Society in putting food on the table for people in need, or keeping the lights on and families in their homes. To find a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in your area, visit svdpusa.org.